Let's do it.
To the right, 5 seconds to go in the first half. Dante fires deep to the left. Moss caught it at the 11, but now he pitches
look at
it.
This.
To Mo Williams! Touchdown!
You gotta be kidding me!
All right, welcome back to another episode of the Climbing the Pocket Podcast. I am your host, Jason Brown. You can find me on Twitter, at BrownJason. Joined once again by the full crew, and we got a fun episode for y'all. A lot of stuff to talk about, but you know, we're going to go around the room here. It's been a little bit since we chatted. QB1, what's going on, my man? How you doing?
Good, man. Getting closer to draft season, getting to the tail end of pro days, and you know, we're inching closer to the big day on April 26th. I'm excited.
Man, that's good times, you know, because I just, you know, I don't know why I did it, but I threw on some old Christian Ponder tape the other day, and you know, you know, Baker Mayfield is starting to give me some of those Christian, like, the draft needs to get here soon, man. Like, that was a real tweet you sent us, that someone said that Baker Mayfield reminded them of Christian Ponder. Like, what is happening out there?
Yeah, I don't know what's up with that.
I know, that's an insult to Christian Ponder.
I mean, he did play for the Vikings, which means he is amazing, and we should never trade any player. I'm sorry, I'm derailing already, but Miles, my man.
He helped lead Adrian Peterson to his MVP season.
He did do that. He did do that. Those are facts, because we know, I mean, the quarterback is the most important position on the field. So, I mean, QB wins means he did those things for Adrian Peterson. Miles, have you rescued any animals since the last time we talked?
Actually, oh, no, I haven't. I almost thought, I was like, wait, hold up. No, I have not.
Okay, well, when you're not being a hero, I guess, what you been up to? You know, how's Teddy doing?
Teddy's good. I got a last second phone call from my mom last weekend asking to help her move. So that kind of stuff.
Okay. All right. So, you know, different kind of heroic work, different kind of heroic work. And Saxy Prince, my man, draft trainer extraordinaire, man. How's it going? How was the pro day? You know, how much time did you spend talking to Rick?
That's funny. Rick actually wasn't there at all. They sent most of their scouts. I think they were down at either Maryland Pro Day or maybe another Pro Day, I believe it was. But no, it went really good. Kool-Aid was – so they got to a point where, you know, they started running and stuff. And, like, you know, Kool-Aid, like, took off his shirt. And, like he was significantly more built than I have ever seen my younger brother. Like, just 201 of just straight muscle. And I think he looked like he ran really well. He seemed loose. He seemed like he was having fun out there, which was obviously the biggest thing. He had some of his, like Devondre Campbell came out. Max Williams came out. Just some of his, obviously, his football buddies just came out to watch, like, the Gopher Pro Day and stuff. And, he looked fantastic. You know, a couple of drop balls and whatnot. But I think he performed well. And, you know, we'll see what happens after they're in a month's time. So,
I mean, I guess the drops are kind of to be expected. I mean, if you could catch, you play wide receiver, right, Mouse?
I mean, that's what everyone says, but like I do still think it's important for DBs to have, like, pretty good hands.
No, it's more like hand-eye coordination. They don't need to have – there's a reason that they play DB, but, like
– Exactly.
But, like, you just need to have hand-eye coordination. You don't have to be receiver-like.
Oh, no, not at all.
Catch the ball if it's in your area. That's any athlete, though. Be an athlete.
Well, you know, speaking of athletes and receivers.
Oh, don't do
it. Yeah, we got to do it, Miles. We got to. We got to talk about it. We got
to
do it.
It doesn't have to be about him.
We got to do it. We got to talk about it. So, you know, Odell Beckham Jr. has been in the news quite a bit of late, you know, this offseason. He's taken a few L's, you know, had some poor judgment, maybe been hanging around the wrong type of person, or hanging around the right type of person with the wrong type of social media rules. And, you know, some of his business has been put out in the street. So now the Giants, you know, trade rumors have started to swell around Odell Beckham Jr. As we all know, Odell basically just put it out there that, you know, he wants to get paid. He probably won't play this final season without a new contract and some long-term stability. He said he wants to be the highest paid, I think he said, offensive player in the game, which we know won't happen, but he's basically saying, you know, pay me my money. And so now, with some of the comments that have come out recently, you know, they haven't shut down trade rumors. Even though Odell Beckham Jr. is far and away their best player, they haven't really shut down the rumors and are even hinting at, you know, that he could be moved. Adam Schefter, I think, put out that he might go for something similar to what the Vikings got for Percy Harvin, which seems crazy. And so my question for all of y'all is, and start with you on this one, JR, what current Viking star would you be willing to give up to get Odell Beckham Jr.?
Take what you want.
Pick which one you want. You only get to pick one, though, JR. So just pick one and tell me why that would be the Viking star player that you'd be willing to part with for Odell Beckham Jr.
Everson Griffin.
Okay.
Why do I say Everson Griffin? I think he's on the tail end of his career. He's still playing at an elite level, but I think he's probably at the peak of his career. I don't want to say he's plateaued because I don't think I still think he can have an even better year than he had last year. We all know he battled that plantar fasciitis in his foot, and he really wasn't the same after that. But I mean, he's about to be 30 years old if he's not already. So it's probably going to go downhill at this point. And I think if you can get a guy like Odell Beckham Jr., who's a guy that's obviously going to get better with the more reps he gets, and there's only been three other players with more receiving touchdowns in their first 45 games than Odell Beckham Jr. That's Rob Gronkowski, Randy Moss, and Jerry Rice. We're talking about an elite level talent. And I've said it plenty of times, Odell Beckham Jr. has the best hands that I've ever seen since I've been watching football. Him and Chris Carter are probably the top guys for me. I haven't seen a player that has better hands or an overall better game than what Odell Beckham has. And I think he's the elite of an elite talent. Obviously, he comes with all his off-the-field antics, but a lot of people don't understand that really comes with the position. Most wide receivers are divas, and it's just what comes with the territory of the position. Now, will the Vikings ever do that? Of course not. That's not the type of culture that they built in the locker room. They don't really have big personalities outside of Everson Griffin and Stephon Diggs. So, of course, this is just basically a fairy tale situation. But if I was forced to make a trade for Odell Beckham Jr., I would be fine with giving up Everson Griffin.
Okay. Diva. What would you give up for Odell Beckham Jr.?
So I'm going to do one logical trade and one just get rid of somebody trade.
Okay.
JR did take my one on defense. I think Everson Griffin would have been the guy I would have looked to try to trade because they just got rid of, you know, Jason Pierre-Paul looking for an edge rusher. I think he'd come in and fit pretty well next to Snacks and everything, Snacks Harrison and all that.
And giving up a lot of assets and then paying a lot of money to older players is something I think Gettleman would do too. That seems to fit his MO. So that makes some sense.
Even though, yeah, right. But I think on offense, if I'm looking at kind of what the construct of the team is right now and who you have coming up on, you know, extensions and where your money is kind of sitting, you're looking at signing Stephon Diggs to an extension at this point. And I don't know the exact number Diggs is looking to get. I know he'd probably get more in the open market, but for here, I'd probably see around 12, 13 million per. So I think based off of between him and Adam Thielen is making pennies right now. So it'd be a little easier to find the idea to trade Diggs because Diggs and Odell, Odell's a better wide receiver at this stage than Stephon Diggs is, but they play similarly in terms of kind of the way they get open and stuff like that. I think Odell is significantly better. But I think if you were to trade those two, just trade, you know, Diggs for Beckham straight up. Well, not straight up, but like in terms of a player, I'd probably give up Diggs because, like I said, you do have another guy in Adam Thielen who's making pennies. So you trade Diggs, you get Odell back, you pay Odell a little bit more than you – well, not a little bit, but you pay Odell more than you pay Diggs. And I'd probably even offer up Eric Kendricks. I'd do Eric Kendricks, Stephon Diggs for Odell. See what they say. I think that'd be kind of a decent trade. You probably wouldn't be able to afford one of those guys on defense. So I'd rather, you know, upgrade at wide receiver and lose a replaceable guy like Eric Kendricks, upgrade at receiver, and then, you know, replace and draft his replacement. So That'd probably be where I'm at. And then you'd probably have to throw in a pick in there. I'm not even – you might not have to throw in a pick, but maybe I'm not exactly sure. But I'd be willing to do like a Stephon Diggs, Eric Kendricks for Odell Beckham
trade. Just throw in a running back and get him and it'll be good.
Right. Who's our Mac Brown? He can have
there
him.
There you go. You got it. You got it right there. And Saxy Prince, how about you, man? What Viking star would you be willing to give up for Odell Beckham Jr.?
Well, I mean, Miles said a lot of it, but I would love to see Odell Beckham play with Stephon Diggs, so I'd be more than willing to give up Adam Thielen. I mean, obviously the money becomes an issue because you end up paying two guys probably north of $13 million each. But I, you know, to have two of the like the hottest wide receivers in the league, or two of the, you know, Odell being obviously a top five guy and Stephon Diggs being a top 10 type guy, that would just be a nightmare to have to game plan against. And you know, it would be one of the most explosive Vikings offenses we've seen probably since Randy Moss and Chris Carter way back when. And Odell obviously is on a Hall of Fame, you know, first ballot Hall of Fame type career projection right now. He's easily a top five wide receiver and a talent that you, like, any team should want to covet. You know, you have to be willing to give up a first round pick for a guy like Odell, you know, because at the end of the day, you know, first round picks are essentially used to get talent that you think have the potential to become a guy like Odell. So
proven talent trumps proven talent, unproven
yeah,
talent.
Yeah, exactly. Proven talent. And you have to understand, it was like, what, like 30% rate of first round wide receivers becoming, you know, those true number ones. And then on top of that, trying to become, you know, a top 10, top five type talent. And Odell is already there. So
top three, you know, like,
yeah, exactly. Right. So I would,
and just so on the record, I would rather trade Adam Thielen than Stephon Diggs, but I was looking at it in a more,
yeah, realistic, you know, it makes sense with the way that you phrase it, because obviously if you're going to, you know, you're gonna have to pay one of the two, you would obviously give up a guy who's, you know, probably make somewhat similar as what Odell would make. But, you know, if I could pick really anyone unrealistically, yeah, I'd pick Adam Thielen. I would love to have Adam or Stephon Diggs and Odell Beckham Jr. on
y'all
the
same. Y'all trying to make us lose listeners. y'all trading the pride of Minnesota.
I traded Diggs.
I think, but seriously, like, I think, you know, obviously the Giants, they would, you know, they would lose Odell and stuff. But I think I could see Adam Thielen's thriving in New York. He definitely could do that. I mean, he's a
Jason Seahorn?
He's a fantastic talent. He's a fantastic talent. And, you know, he would work in that system. So,
okay. Okay, well, I'm going to bring it home and say that I would trade Kirk Cousins for Odell Beckham Jr.
See, I was going to say that, but I know y'all were going to give me shit.
Wow.
So.
What? I mean, you know, the Giants need a quarterback.
We can't trade Kirk Cousins, by the way.
Why?
His contract. Oh, his contract says he cannot be traded.
He would go to New York now. I mean, it's the biggest media market in the world. Cares about his paper.
He chose not to go to New York.
I mean,
what?
That, not that New York. You don't want to go to the Jets, New York. You don't want to go to the Jets. Go to the team that the media actually likes in New York.
Wait, he would rather go to New York without. He'd rather go to New York without Odell. What?
He would have
Shurmur, though. So
he'd be there with Sherm. He'd have Evan Engram, Sterling Shepard. Yeah. So we just, you know, we'll see Kirk. We get OBJ. Everybody's happy.
And we're starting Trevor Siemian.
Hey. It's Slaughter time. Slaughter time. Don's dream finally comes true.
Don't do that.
No, well. you got Slaughter throwing to Thielen, Diggs, and Odell Beckham Jr. Super Bowl, baby. Super Bowl. And we lost Prince already. There he is. All right. Well, with that, you know, that foolishness out of the way. Obviously, Kirk ain't going nowhere. I was just playing. Please put the pitchforks down. We were just joking around. Nobody actually wants Adam Thielen or Kirk Cousins to go anywhere. But what? If you do have complaints, please take those complaints to Saxy Prince. He is the complaints department. So send all of your angry tweets to Saxy Prince at Saxy Prince on Twitter.
my DMs are always open. So
that is also true. That is also true. All right. So some news and notes, some things to talk about here, and get y'all's thoughts real quick. And Sexy Prince, I'll start with you. The Vikings apparently are whining and dining Kendall Wright as they continue their search for a viable wide receiver.
Chipotle.
Because you know he ain't going to Manny's.
Manny's. You saying Kendall Wright can't get some Manny's miles?
I just said Chipotle.
Okay. So, Prince, what are your thoughts, man? Kendall Wright, what do you think about his fit with the team? What do you think this means for, you know, someone like a Treadwell that they you know, the brass actually is not just, you know, bringing in a Kendall Wright and trying to sign him, but they're actually taking him out, doing the tour and all those things. What are your thoughts? You think this means anything, or is this like another, you know, dart throw like a Michael Floyd from last season?
I think it's like a combination of a lot of things. I think we know that how the team has kind of said how they feel about, without directly saying how they feel about Treadwell. I think Treadwell at this point, you know, he's one of those guys where if you can get some production out of him, that's fantastic. But at this point, they've kind of moved on. They are looking for that wide receiver three. And, you know, maybe even someone to push, push the top two guys to become even better. Not to say that they would unseat them or anything, but just another guy that they can add into that rotation, because I think that's something that they missed last season and really missed a third target to consistently take away pressure for Adam Thielen and Stephon Diggs. And I think Kendall Wright has definitely been – he was a former first-round pick, and I don't think he's obviously lived up to that thus far. I do think that he's, you know, not quite performed the way that he probably should have been, but I don't think that's necessarily something that we can't take advantage of. I think when you look at John DeFilippo, like what he can do with him, you know, moving him around more so in the slot, kick him out outside. I mean, that may be something that he toys with between him and Adam Thielen and Stephon Diggs. So it boils down to, obviously, they're trying to find that wide receiver three. And as far as a fit, I think it still remains to be seen. But, you know, it's like, why not throw a dart at a guy that, you know, maybe had a lot of potential coming into the draft way back when, and, you know, maybe hasn't quite lived up to that hype, and hope that you might be able to get some of those, some of that potential that you may have seen years ago. So I'm okay with it. You know, you guys know I'm a Jarius Wright guy, but, you know, he's no longer with the team. So we need to find someone to not just fill Jarius Wright's role, but also do more than what Jarius Wright was doing when he was here. So I'm okay with it. I'm okay with the move.
Okay, Miles, how about you, man? Tell us about Kendall Wright. Do you know anything about his game? Do you remember watching him when he was coming out? Did you watch him at all in the last couple of years as he's bounced around, I guess, with the Bears, the Titans, and anyone else he's played with? Tell us about his fit. Like, does this make sense to you?
Yeah, I think exactly what it is. I think it'd be basically bringing back Jarius Wright on a cheaper deal. I think that's kind of their intent. He's a slot receiver specific, so you have a guy who runs good routes out of the slot. He's, you know, his quick twitch agility. He doesn't have breakaway speed, but he's super quick in and out of breaks. I think there was a stat that came out today that he was one of the highest rated receivers running out of the slot last year. So I think what he does is he allows you to, in potential three wide receiver sets, to line up in the slot and move Adam Thielen outside and kind of find mismatches and move those guys around. I think it's just basically like another Jarius Wright. How much he plays, I don't know. I think he would potentially probably give you a little bit more of a downfield factor, a little bit more run after the catch ability than Jarius Wright did. But at the same time, I think he brings you a veteran receiver who can come in and compete and provide good depth, you know, to the passing game. So and I know he did test similarly to a guy in Jamison Crowder from Washington, which I know Kirk Cousins liked a lot. And I know Kirk Cousins likes his guy. He likes to throw inside the hash and inside the numbers. You know, Jamison Crowder, Jordan Reed, you know. So I think if he can get that slot receiver who he trusts, I think that could go a long way for him too.
All right, and last but certainly not least on this one here, JR, what are your thoughts? Kendall Wright, coming in? Would this be something that made you kind of, you know, excited about how the Vikings offense was kind of rounding out? Or is it just kind of a, okay, veteran is going to come in, compete, but might not make the roster type thing?
Well, first of all, I'm shocked that Prince didn't say anything, because Miles was kind of attacking the brand right there, that Jerry is right. I was surprised by that, that Prince didn't chime in, you know, saying Jerry's wasn't really a down-the-field threat. No, I thought that might have rubbed Yinka the wrong way a little bit.
He hasn't been since, like, his rookie year.
But anyway, I think it'd be a solid pickup. I mean, they wouldn't expect much out of him. He'd be your primary guy in the slot. I think Thielen's production would take a little bit of a hit, because Kendall Wright is a guy that can't consistently win on the outside because the stature just limits that. But like Miles said, now you can have that three-man rotation in the slot where all those guys are versatile, and Thielen, Diggs, and even Wright. And John DeFilippo could really get creative with the way he uses all of those guys. And I think the comparison of him to Jameson Crowder is spot on. And we saw how Kirk Cousins loved pushing the ball to Crowder, especially in the short and intermediate areas on those quick screens and those, you know, the shallow crosses and digs over the middle. So I think it would be a really solid pickup, and they wouldn't really expect much out of him. But I think now you're starting to create depth along that wide receiver core, and I don't think that really deters them from drafting a guy either.
All right. Speaking of draft, JR, you know, you said it's your season, and a quarterback from the University of Louisville had a pro day today. How'd it go?
Yeah, Lamar Jackson. I thought he did pretty good for the most part, and what he showed at his pro day is exactly what we saw on film. There was a lot of hype coming into his pro day. A lot of people had some things that they wanted to see from him, especially how he rebounded from how he threw at the combine. A lot of people really were skeptical of how he threw at the combine. He didn't really get a lot of positive reviews, even though the reviews seemed to be mixed for the most part. But, of course, the media kind of shined the light a little bit more on the negative side from an accuracy standpoint, and that's always been the biggest question with him. But at his pro day, he had 59 throws total. Really didn't throw a lot of outside the numbers types of throws, and that's really what a lot of people wanted to see from him. But as far as his deep accuracy, I thought it was really well. The intermediate accuracy was really good, especially over the middle, and that's always been his strength. And what I really liked about his pro day was it was very well organized, and he did something different that a lot of other quarterbacks didn't do. He actually incorporated an actual center into his workout, showing that he could take drops from under center and not just crouching down, holding the ball out in front of him and simulating the center. He had an actual guy out there in front of him. So I thought it was really good that he incorporated that in his workouts. But the biggest flaw that I see from him was evident at his pro day. Once again, the ball really flutters. Once he makes those outbreaking routes or outbreaking throws outside of the numbers, and that's always been his biggest struggle. He's more comfortable throwing to his left as opposed to throwing to his right, which is really different. Right-handed quarterbacks usually are more comfortable throwing to the right as opposed to their left, but that's really different with Lamar. So he's more comfortable throwing to his left as opposed to opening up and throwing to his right. But the narrow base did show a little bit in his pro day, but it did get a little bit better. It's not as narrow as it was during the season, so it's good to see he has made some improvements on that. I still don't think he's ready to come in and start right away in the NFL, but if he does go to a team that does force him to start right away, there's going to be lots of highs and lows with him, because, I mean, he's a highlight reel waiting to happen, but that can be a good thing and a bad thing. So it'll be interesting to see if he does still go in the tail end of the first round or if he does go in the high parts on day two.
Okay. All right. And Miles, I know you had some thoughts on this, but did he make a mistake not hiring an agent?
I don't think he made a mistake. I think the issue is teams are struggling with the fact that he doesn't have an agent. And I think, you know, there was a report earlier that came out that said it sounds like he might be a little harder to reach than what teams seem to be, you know, what teams, you know, when teams have tried to reach out to him. And and, you know, get a hold of him or his mom or whoever is working with him. It sounds like that's been a little bit of an issue. And I don't think it's really so much. I'm sure it's not that big of an issue. I think the problem is that some of these GMs, these scouts, they're used to calling one specific agent to get a hold of a player. And they have a relationship with a lot of these agents just because they work with other players that they've worked with. So there's a lot of that continuity that they're used to just, you know, I need to talk to Lamar Jackson. So I'm going to call, hypothetically, I'm going to call Ben Dogra. And, you know, you have a relationship with Ben Dogra because you worked with Adrian Peterson in the past, you know, yada, yada, yada. So I think a lot of that is probably some of the issues that I think teams are having with Lamar Jackson right now, just because they don't know, they don't have a relationship with his, you know, the people he's working with. They have to, you know, try to get a hold of him directly, stuff like that. So it's a lot harder to do. And I think that's probably where the biggest issue with him not having an agent is in terms of his marketability with other teams. I don't think it's a problem. I think it's good for him. I think he should save some of that money. I don't think it'll change his draft stock in terms of on field. I mean, if you look at his tape, you look at his interviews as a, you know, as a player and everything like that, I don't see any issues with it. You know, if you like Lamar Jackson, you're going to make it work no matter what. You're not going to care that he doesn't have an agent. So, like I said, I don't think it's a big deal. I just think some of these teams are struggling with the fact that they have to work through Lamar Jackson himself instead of through his agent, who they probably would have a relationship with. So I think that's where the issue is.
And so this is one of those things I've always wondered, you know, I don't want to get too far derailed out this, but it feels like anytime a player does something without an agent, there's we'll call a certain kind of circle of reporters. And, you know, obviously I think, you know, it's pretty well known that reporters and the insiders very often are getting their information from, you know, agents and feeding information from agents. But it seems that whenever a player goes and does something on their own, so like, you know, Richard Sherman goes and negotiates a contract, you know, on his own, you know, with a lawyer helping him out versus having an agent, or a couple of years back, Russell Okun, you know, represents himself, gets himself a contract, whatever. It seems there's always a lot of pretty harsh media pushback. I guess how much of that do we think is driven by the teams themselves? And how much of that do we think is, you know, the agents kind of getting the guys that, you know, they help out with inside information to kind of spin that negative narrative to kind of help secure their spot? And, you know, Prince, I'll kick it to you for that one, and we'll try to go through this one pretty quick.
I think it's like it's an issue because I don't think that the league is quite ready for the NFL to be kind of player driven, right? Right now, obviously, the league is dominated by, you know, these GMs and these agents relationships, as you kind of pointed out. But, you know, I feel like there's maybe a start shift of more players wanting to, you know, kind of represent themselves or represent or, you know, get some sort of representation that's outside the norm that is, you know, these really well-known agents that, you know, represent a vast majority of players out there. And I think some of that pushback also comes with, you know, obviously, like, we know during before the tampering period, like, GMs and agents and stuff, you know, they'll have conversations and deals under the table and stuff, but it becomes a lot more complicated when, you know, you are talking to a player directly, because, you know, you obviously can get a lot more trouble that way. So I think the league just, it has always struggled with players really just having a mind for themselves. I think that's something that the NBA does a really great job with, and the NFL kind of struggles with it. More people, obviously, harder to control the narrative more often than not. So, and with that just comes the media. You know, media has to, the media has to kind of understand the conversation that happens between teams and players and stuff. And someone like Lamar Jackson, who I think is a really smart, intelligent player, quarterback. I don't think he'll have any problem understanding NFL concepts, all that stuff. But it is a little bit weird for them to hear a dude who's just like, who hasn't been taught the same cliches that they, like, every player is getting taught to say. And he's just out there, he's just talking, he's just being him, he's being Lamar Jackson. And that's going to rub people the wrong way, because they want to just hear the same old cliches that they hear year in and year out. So I think it's just going to be an adjustment period. And I think it's going to be what it is now, is a few players are going to get burned and throughout the media unnecessarily. But then in the future, you'll probably see more and more players do it. And, you know, I think still certain players won't get that treatment and certain players will.
And JR, I guess, yeah, I'll let you to bring us home on this one here. I guess, what are your thoughts on, you know, Lamar Jackson kind of going a different way and not going the traditional route and having an agent and, you know, maybe preparing the way some others have prepared for this draft process? Do you think this is something that's ultimately going to, you know, hurt him in a big way? Or do you think at the end of the day, what's on tape and the talent's going to win out?
I think it's a little mixture of both. I think the agents are really pushing this to make an example out of Lamar Jackson, especially when trying to appeal to future draft prospects and just use his draft process as an example of how you really need an agent during this process. And we've heard reports of Lamar not being very prepared at the whiteboard, at the combine, and even his pro day. You know, some people were criticizing that. So little things like that, I think, could come back to haunt him because he really doesn't have anything to fall back on. And he doesn't have anybody to protect him because his mom obviously is his agent, but she's not a notable name. And what you see with Josh Allen is everyone saying, you know, the completion percentage and all this other stuff about him, but he has the arm strength to fall back on. Everybody's talking about Baker Mayfield, his off the field stuff and his antics that he had throughout his Oklahoma career, but he has extreme accuracy to fall back on. And we talk about Sam Darnold and Josh Rosen. They all have their deficiencies, but they have that strength that they have had to fall back on during this process. And then on the other hand, we go to Lamar Jackson, who everybody's saying he's just a runner. He's not really a quarterback. He's a receiver, but he skipped the testing. You know, he wasn't prepared on the whiteboard. So he really doesn't have that strength to fall back on or that person to fight back with him on his side in the media like those other guys have. So he doesn't have anybody to fight those narratives for him throughout the media. And that's why you see his name kind of getting dragged through the mud throughout the process, because he doesn't have that person in his corner to fight back on. So I think it kind of was a mistake for him not to have an agent. But on the flip side of that, I think it's more of agents and teams trying to make an example out of him.
Okay, that's fair. That's fair. That makes some sense here. Well,
Jared, quick question for you on that. Do you think it's really going to hurt his draft stock that much, not having an agent? I know there's some of this, you know, sounds like, you know, people dragging him a little bit, but do you think it's really at the end of the day going to change drastically how much different he goes in the draft?
No, I don't. I just think people need something to talk about at this point. That those 3 weeks in between, you know, the last pro day and the NFL draft is really what I call silly season, where the rumors just start flying crazy. And that's what we're about to enter right now. And a lot of people have to understand that Lamar Jackson is from Florida. He didn't grow up with a lot as far as, you know, he grew up in a very poverty-stricken home. His dad died at an early age. His grandmother died at an early age. So his mom is really the only person that he really trusts. And that's why I think that was one of the biggest reasons why he never really hired an agent. And his mom actually trains a lot of youth football players in Florida. She still does it to this day. So she's very involved with football and very involved with the community. And she trained Lamar growing up. And that's really the only person that he trusts. And she really doesn't trust anybody either. And I really think they want to keep the money within the family. They don't really trust any outsiders.
Okay. All right. All right. All right. Well, I guess the last, I guess we'll say like newsworthy thing that we want to talk about here is there's some NFL rule changes. So a couple of them were announced here, and, you know, the Dez Bryant rule kind of went through, and, you know, everyone is pretty much meeting that with universal acclaim. Catch process, determining what's a catch should be made a little bit easier. We got what I'm going to call the Stephon Diggs rule, which is, you know, after a walk-off touchdown, you don't have to bring the kicker out to kick the extra point. But lastly, we have the Andrew Sendejo rules, what I'm calling the last one here. That seems to have people really upset. So, JR, obviously, I'm going to start with you on this one because, you played ball. You played in college, so we're just going to kind of go through here and talk about this and get y'all's thoughts about it. Folks seem really upset about this one here where, you know, the idea that, you know, defender, running back, whomever, should, you know, keep the head up when making a tackle. That's really, you know, with everything that I've read about it, that's the only thing I've really taken away from it, is that, you know, keep your head up, see what you're hitting, is kind of what this rule is saying. Don't use the helmet as a weapon. What are your thoughts on this? I mean, do you think this is something that is, you know, I know it's the off season, like you said, there's not much going on, so we need something to talk about, but do you think that this rule is really going to do all the negative things that people are saying it's going to do to the game, just based on your interpretation of what it means? And it's still vague right now, but just based on your thoughts and what it means from what you've read.
Yeah, I mean, as far as people complain about it making the game soft and all that other stuff, I don't think that's necessarily going to be true. Now, what I do have a problem with is I think it's making the game extremely tougher on the officials. And it's just making it impossible for them to determine exactly what's going to be a foul and what's going to be an ejection, because a lot of running backs throughout the league, they lower the crown of their helmet when they're running, and they don't intentionally mean to do it. It's just how their running style is, and it's a habit that they have. And I mean, even a guy like, think about Adrian Peterson in his heyday, he probably would have 5 to 6 penalties a game alone, because that's just his running style. And then the thing about football is that you have to make a decision in the blink of an eye, and it's just guys' natural instinct to duck their head. And even a guy like we used earlier for an example, Andrew Sandejo, his tackling form basically is torpedoing into everybody. So now you're asking him to change his entire technique. And I mean, I'm fine with that, but I just think it's going to be a huge adjustment for a lot of guys. And I think it's going to slow the game down even more. And I mean, I'm all for player safety and I'm fine with the rule, but they're really going to have to be detailed with this rule, because there's going to be a lot of teams that challenge this rule. And if it does end up passing into the season, I think there's really going to be something that's made out of an example of this rule that's going to cause a team a game or two. Because, I mean, you talk about guys going in on the goal line, ducking his head with an intent to run somebody over. Is that a foul or is it not? It's just something simple like that. I think there's a fine line in between what's a penalty and what's not. I think it's going to be a very, very detailed rule that they're going to have to thoroughly explain to teams, because it could get ugly.
Okay. All right, Miles, what are your thoughts, man? Is it making the game soft?
I think the NFL in general has really favored the NFL over the last, 10 or so years with a lot of the rule changes they've made anyways. I think this changes that much. I think the biggest issue I have with it is the potential ejection rule. I don't know if that's gone through or not. Jason, do you know that? I know they've talked about, like, kind of like the call, the way you target, the way you hit somebody, you know, could potentially lead to an ejection. I think that would be a bigger issue for me than like the actual rule itself, just because I do think if you want to help prevent concussions and prevent, you know, situations like a Ryan Shazier, it is about keeping your head up. I think that's super important. Now, I think some of the issue that, you know, refs like JR said that they're going to have a hard time with is the intent of it. Not all guys are intentionally lowering their head to make a tackle or to run, you know, try to break a tackle. A lot of times, sometimes your head just naturally goes down in situations and you're not intentionally trying to do it. So I think there's a little bit of trouble with interpretation there too. So I think that's where it's going to be the hardest. I don't think it really changes too much though, unless you do start ejecting players or it starts getting overcalled and becomes, you know, this major rule, kind of like the pass interference rule, where, you know, basically everything's a pass interference. Just like, is every tackle going to be this kind of penalty? So we'll see how it plays out. And I'm sure the preseason will be the biggest aspect of where we'll see how they kind of feel about it, because they'll probably overcall it in the preseason. So people will probably overreact to it a little bit, but they want to see different examples of it in the preseason so they can kind of gauge it during the regular season of how they might react to certain situations. So I don't think it's too big of a deal, but if they do start ejecting players or start calling it a ridiculous amount, that's when I'll start having issues.
Okay. And Prince, lastly, what are your thoughts here? You know, does this make the game too hard for the defenders? And then really the flip side, because that's one of the things that, you know, JR did bring up. you know, I mean, if you're risking a 15-yard penalty every time you try to run the ball to get yourself, you know, 3 yards, I mean, what's the effect this might have on your beloved running game, Prince?
Well, I mean, this is, I guess this is an extension of a rule that's, I think, what was it, 2011 or 2010 or something, when they had a similar rule that they wanted to kind of protect defenders and players and just making sure that they were being a lot more safe. So, I mean, I want to see Andrew Sendejo stop torpedoing himself at opposing offenders and then obviously even our own teammates and stuff. So, I mean, like, I like the fact that the NFL is trying to take steps, but I mean, JR already kind of mentioned that it's, the issue is implementation. How are you going to make sure that the rules are enforced consistently throughout, so you're not having games being determined on, oh, well, this player lowered his head, so 15-yard penalty, you know, team's out of field goal range, game's over, essentially, you know? Because at the end of the day, you obviously want there always to be a balance of, you know, rules being created to help with player safety, first and foremost, but then also rules that are going to be able to be enacted so that you know that, like, everything is fair, you know, each and every play. And I just think that the fact that they simplified the catch rule was fantastic, but I feel like they just added another rule that's just going to make it even more difficult, you know? So I guess we'll see. I just think that there's some good and bad in both of it, but my biggest worry is just, like, how are you going to enforce it, and are you going to be consistent about how you enforce it? Because really, at the end of the day, that's really all that matters. As long as you're staying consistent with it, you know, people can appreciate it.
All right. All right. All right. All right. All right. Good stuff. Good takes. Well, you know, we're going to wrap this thing up with some a little bit of draft talk. So last time we were here, we talked about the offensive side of the ball, talked about some players, you know, that potentially could make some sense for the Vikings, you know, to help fill out, you know, the offense, get Kirk Cousins some protection. Well, you know, it's not really talked about as often, but, you know, we have a, I'd say more than anything, we have some depth issues on the defensive side of the ball. And so, you know, we're going to have a quick conversation about, you know, I guess some of the guys that you guys may be looking at scouting, hoping that the Vikings will pick up. So, JR, I'm going to kick it to you because, you know, we're talking draft stuff. So, obviously, we're gonna start with you here. And I want you to walk us through, you know, the defensive linemen, the linebackers that would make sense for us. Miles, bring us home with the DBs. And then we got this and this or that, and we out of here. So, gentlemen, JR. Draft season, take it away, man.
Yeah, so they're probably going to address the interior early, within the first three rounds would be my guess. Now, which round exactly in those first three rounds, we really don't know, depending on how the board falls. Some of those early guys, probably in the first two rounds, you're talking about Maurice Hurst, Deron Payne, Taven Bryan, Nathan Shepard, and B.J. Hill, just to name some of those guys. Maurice Hurst, we all know his situation with his heart condition. Yes, he's been cleared by the University of Michigan doctors, but we don't know if he's cleared certain NFL teams protocol. So it's going to be interesting to see exactly where he falls on draft day. He's actually my highest ranked interior defensive lineman right now. He puts you in the mind frame of Sharif Floyd, a guy that has an elite first step. Very balanced defensive lineman, disruptive against the run, disruptive against the pass, a true natural penetrator, more of your true three technique. Had a great season in 2017, was by far one of their better defenders on that side of the ball. So has an NFL bloodline. Dad played for the Patriots, was drafted by them in 1989. Very humble guy. But, of course, the one thing that's, you know, out there about his draft stock and really hard to project is the heart condition. Another guy, Taven Bryan, George Edwards was down at Florida's pro day a couple of days ago. So obviously they have interest in him. Very interesting case. He really only has a couple years of production. Last year was really the first year where he really stood out on their defense. He has some football IQ questions. He needs to be tamed a little bit. And what I mean by that is he has okay technique, but it needs to be refined a little bit. He plays kind of wild and crazy at times, and he's a true penetrator, a guy that gets up the field. But he has a tendency of being over aggressive, and he'll just leave gaps wide open. He really doesn't understand what's going on in front of him. He just tries to run to a quarterback, and before you know it, they're dumping a screen pass over his head, or he's leaving the gap wide open for a run play. So he really needs to get some more awareness of what's going on around the field, and that's kind of what worries me about him, because football IQ is a thing that comes naturally. He just doesn't show that consistently on film. The next guy is De'Ron Payne from Alabama. We saw how well he played in the national championship game against Georgia. That really was his one shining moment of the year. Otherwise, he kind of was really up and down. Other than that, he's a guy that puts you in the mind frame of a Timmy Jernigan kind of defensive tackle, more of your true run stuffing guy, as opposed to a guy that's consistently going to give you a pass rush or a guy that can push the pocket. He's not a guy that's able to consistently do that down in and down out. But his value as a run defender is valued very highly. And, you know, you can see him going anywhere from 15 to 35. That's where his draft range is right now. Nobody really knows exactly where he's going to go. And then you get into that next tier of guys. You talk about Nathan Shepherd and B.J. Hill. The Vikings have actually had Nathan Shepherd on a top 30 visit. And, you know, he's a Canadian. So I know Jason is very, very familiar with him. He's a very interesting case as well. He actually originally went to Simon Fraser, which is a school in Canada. He ended up giving up football. He left there. He had some financial situations that was going on. So he was a construction worker for 2 years. And then he just got fed up, got tired of doing that. Then he wanted to play football again. And he ended up going to a small school in Kansas called Fort Hays State. And he ended up shining out there. Blew up at the Senior Bowl, was having a great first couple of days of practice. Then he broke his hand. His stock soared from there. He had a great combine, weighed in great, 6'5", 315, ran really well and tested really well there. So his stock has really been on the upward trend since the combine and the Senior Bowl. And the last guy would be B.J. Hill from NC State. Mike Mayock actually compared him to Linval Joseph at his pro day. Andre Patterson was there at NC State running him through drills. And whenever a Vikings position coach shows up and actually takes a player through drills, they have some type of significant interest. So obviously B.J. Hill is that guy that can be that one technique to back up Linval Joseph and be in that second group with Jahlil Johnson. So all of those guys are some names to keep an eye on as far as interior guys, some linebackers. I don't think they're going to draft a linebacker very early. So I think they'll probably go more for depth guys. And I mean, the one guy I've been pointing out forever, obviously, is Shaquem Griffin. Rick Spielman obviously came out and said some very nice comments about him. We all know his story. We all know his situation. I think he'd be a great fit as an off the ball outside linebacker. And he also brings some special teams value as well. Jack Sissy is another name that they've been highly interested in. He battled some injuries at Wisconsin. And he's your guy that can probably you can get in the sixth or seventh round. But when he is healthy, he has shown to play at a very high level. But obviously, he's battled some nagging injuries. He didn't play at all last year, battling a knee injury. So keep a name or keep an eye out for those two guys. So those are pretty much all the guys that they have been targeting or I think would be a good fit as interior defensive linemen or linebackers.
And, yeah, I mean, you mentioned linebacker and, you know, Miles actually brought this to attention because, you know, I missed it and Miles is my news source. So if Miles missed it, it definitely meant that I missed it. But do you know anything about this linebacker they signed today or signed, if it wasn't today, yesterday, recently?
Never heard of him.
Rashard Clyde. Where'd he come from?
I've never heard of him before.
Okay, so nobody's heard of him. I don't feel so bad then. I feel okay. All right, good. Miles.
He was a late round pick that Houston got in 2015. He tested really well at the combine, but okay. I think he's just like a special teams
guy then.
Depth okay. guy, yeah.
All right, well, Miles, defensive backs, your nemesis tell us about the ones we should be looking at for these Vikings.
Yeah, I'll start with cornerback just because I think that's a need that I think they might address somewhat early this year just because we don't know what the status is of long-term futures of Mackenzie Alexander and Trey Waynes. We haven't heard anything about them picking up Trey Waynes' fifth-year option yet. They have until May to do it, but which I do expect them to, but you never know. I think corner-wise, you know, some early names. I think a guy like, you know, they were at his pro day today, and I know it sounds like they have a top 30 visit with Mike Hughes from UCF. He's currently my number one rated corner, and he's going to be my number rated corner going into the draft. I just think the way he mirrors receivers, his hips is, and his ball skills are ridiculous. I think he had got himself into a little bit of trouble at North Carolina, where he originally went to college, then ended up transferring to a JUCO, and then ended up at UCF this last year. But he had a phenomenal year. He's a kick and punt returner. He could play in the nickel, and he could play on the outside. I think obviously he's a primary outside corner, but I think if you needed to, I think early on in his career, I think he could be a nickel corner. So he's one of my favorite guys. And then I think if you go down, I'm going to primarily talk about nickel corners, though, just because I think if you're looking at what the Vikings needs are right now, depending on how they feel about Mackenzie Alexander, which heading into the free agency, it sounds like some of the names that they were looking at were primarily nickel corners. So if that's the position they still want to continue to target in the draft, there are some pretty good options this year. I think Dante Jackson, who ran a really fast 40 from LSU, he's got shorter arms, but he's got really good he's quick twitch, really good in and out of cuts, and I think he's really fluid. So I think he'd be a guy to take a look at on day two. A guy I really like, Duke Dawson from Florida. He's got a lot of that Brian Poole to his game. He's physical against receivers. He struggles a little bit with some of the hip flexibility, but I think he's a guy that could come in and contribute right away. He'd help in the run game as well. Another one is MJ Stewart. He's the guy that actually played with Mike Hughes when they were both in North Carolina. He comes from North Carolina. He's another guy I see as a nickel guy who could come in and help right away, be a potential starter. So those are some of the names I really like at corner for the Vikings right now, in terms of, you know, depending on where they wanted to go. If they're looking for a day three guy or a late day two guys, you know, MJ Stewart, Duke Dawson, Dante Jackson, those are the kind of guys I look at. And if they wanted to at pick 30 or like early in round two, because he's a cornerback one, but I don't anticipate seeing Mike Hughes going as the number one cornerback. But I could see them, you know, taking a chance on him or taking him at pick 30 in round one if he was there. Going to the safety wise, though, I think that's kind of the question of what do they do long term at safety, just because you have guys like Anderson Dejo, and we talked about the rules earlier. I think he's heading into a contract year. He's got, you know, two more years left, but he's getting up there in age. I think he's like 31 now. He is arguably coming off his best season as a pro, but if you're looking to kind of penny pinch and find, you know, somebody to replace him who's cheaper, I think the draft this year would be the way to go, because there are some options. I think Jesse Bates from Wake Forest would be a great pick, you know, like a round three, round four type player. He'd be perfect fit in this defense. I think he can play that free safety role, be that center fielder. Justin Reed, I know JR is a big fan of his, but I think he's a really good safety, but he can come down and play in that nickel situation and be a mismatch and match up against tight ends and running backs as well. I really like Justin Reed from Stanford. If you're looking to try to take a guy in round one, I don't think he'll fall to pick 30, but Ronnie Harrison is the ideal safety in this defense that you'd love to have play opposite Harrison Smith. He's really good from Alabama. And then you have guys like Marcus Allen from Penn State and Jordan Whitehead, Armani Watts from Texas A&M. There are lots of names that I think the Vikings should be keeping an eye on for safety if that's where they want to go in this draft. And then if you're looking at a late round guy, and I know you're going to like this one, Jason, but Troy Apke from Penn State, he ran, I think, like a 4.35 at the combine. He doesn't have a lot of production. I don't think he played. He was more of a special teams guy most of his career at Penn State. But his film as a senior wasn't that bad. He's got some really good instincts. I think he could be a guy that could come in and contribute right away on special teams, but at the same time, potentially be groomed into a role as a starter.
All right. Y'all went deep. I love it. I love it. Good stuff. Good stuff. It really is draft season. And it sounds like, you know, some, both of y'all might be ready to drop some top five lists for us here in the not too distant future. Yeah. Okay. Last thing for today. Last thing. We talked about him earlier. And on the offensive side of the ball, no one, I think, gets people as worked up as Odell Beckham Jr. But on the defensive side of the ball, there was another, big name signing, I think, since the last time we talked, which was Ndamukong Suh joining the Rams to, make it impossible for anyone to run the ball between the tackles, and combined with the defensive backs they have, passing the ball anywhere will probably be fairly challenging. But the question for this week, rapid fire. We're going to start with JR on this one. For 1 year, and I feel like everyone is probably going to have the same answer, but just, for 1 year with everything going on here, would you rather have Odell Beckham Jr. or Sue?
Odell. I think Odell is the easy answer here. You talk about an elite talent at a higher upper echelon position, like wide receiver, a guy you can push the ball to at any point of the game, and he can break the game open at any point in the game as well. So I would easily go with Odell.
Miles?
That's easy. It's Odell. And, that's the right answer. So, yeah.
Prince, you go and give this a clean sweep? Sexy Prince, are you still there?
Yeah, sorry, my bad. Yeah, I think Odell easily. I think Odell is on, not to take anything from Sue, but Odell is, he's on another level for his position. So Odell easily.
And, this is not on the show sheet, but we're talking about it here. So Sue's getting paid, 14 from the Rams for next season. At what point does the Rams giving all this money to all these other players start to become an issue, or become an issue, or become a public issue for Aaron Donald? JR?
I think after this year, it really will. I think the honeymoon stage with Ndamukong Suh teaming up with him, being that formidable duo, I think they'll be fine this year. But if they don't give him his money after this year, I think that's when things will get a little ugly.
Miles, what about you? What you think?
For Aaron Donald?
Yeah. They're doling out money on that team, and
I wouldn't set foot on the field until they paid me, because he literally has nothing to prove. And I know that they've been in – I'm sure – this is speculation, but I know it sounds like there's been a big offer to Aaron Donald, one of those, 5-year Von Miller-type deals that have been, sent his way that he's turned down. I'm wondering if the Kirk Cousins-type fully guaranteed deal is kind of – the short-term deal is kind of more of what he's looking for. And Kirk Cousins signing that deal this offseason could be – exactly what he's looking for now, and he has ammo to do it. So I think that could be part of the holdup. That's all speculation, but a player of his caliber, I wouldn't step field on a football field until I got paid, because he has literally nothing else to prove.
Sexy Prince, bring us home, man. Where you at with it?
Sorry, can you repeat the question?
No, with the Rams spending all this money on all these players, and then, basically I think Sue's going to be making twice as much as Aaron Donald next season.
I thought that was what it was. Honestly, Aaron Donald being younger, Aaron Donald probably being the best at his position is probably going to be the best at his position for – probably the next 6 years. I don't know if this is going to be anything somewhat long term. I mean, maybe if the Rams win and Sue wants to continue to chase that ring, which he might as he gets older. But Aaron Donald needs to be like, I know he tried to do it last season, but this season he really needs to like hold firm. I won't step on the field until you guys are really willing to pay me and pay me like the best D tackle in the league. So I'm on team Aaron Donald. Go get your money, bro.
All right. All right. All right. We've covered everything. Fun show as always. It's getting late. I'm tired. I've been on the road with my bosses all week. So I feel like we can go ahead and just wrap this thing on up now. I guess before we get up out of here, though, JR, it's draft season. I know you've been working hard during draft season. Any, you know, podcasts, appearances, content that you've been working on, anything that you need to plug before we get out of here?
Yeah, so I was just on a podcast with the Bears Bar Room. If you want to hear any Bears content, or if you're a listener of another team, go check that out. That's the BearsBarRoom.com. Also, I was on my weekly segment with the Andy Carlson Show. That should be up right now. Go check that out. Also, I'll be releasing my draft board this year for $5, and I'm going to post a link on April 9th. That's going to be the release day. All proceeds will go to the Raleigh Rise for Hunger Foundation here in Raleigh, North Carolina. So be on the lookout for that.
Awesome, man. Awesome, awesome, awesome. And Miles had to bounce, but we already know what his answer was going to be. You know, it's coming. It's coming soon. Prince, I know you dropped the piece kind of, you know, shouting out the local talent, the Gophers with the pro day and everything else. Anything else you got coming up, or anything else we should be on the lookout for?
Not that I know of right now. I know that I'm kind of helping. I'm helping someone off with a feature on my brother, actually. But as far as me writing, I don't know just yet. Usually these things kind of just come spur of a moment, and then I'll just like start writing for like an hour, and then I'll publish a piece. So you will see.
All right. All right. All right. Well, gentlemen, thanks as always coming on, talking some football with me. Listeners, thank you for sticking it out with us here and listening to this episode of the Climbing the Pocket podcast. We'll talk to you soon. Have a good one.